Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. This is Erica Adler. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. Today, we're going to be talking about an update on the federal vaccine requirements. And so I'd like to introduce to you yet again, Karen Adinolfi, who's a shareholder at Retzel and Andrus and part of our employment group, and really excited to have her back here. I consider her the most knowledgeable person on this topic. For those of you that don't know, I'm also a shareholder at Retzel and Andrus, and I head up our healthcare practice group. So welcome back, Karen, and can't wait to hear for this update. And I'm sure everybody out there wants to kind of make sure that they are still doing what they're required to do. So why don't we start off with you telling us what the developments are, and then we can kind of dig in a little more detail.
Sure. Well, anybody who's been watching the news in the last couple of weeks, even couple of months, knows that we've now got sort of in front of us a couple of different rules about from the federal government about how you treat your employees in the workplace vis-a-vis COVID-19 vaccinations. Back in September, the White House issued an executive order with respect to federal contractors that largely mandates vaccines for federal contractors with certain qualifying contracts. We also have the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that issued its own rule last week. That provides, again, for mandatory vaccinations in the workplace. And then the one that's probably received the most attention is the one from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which applies to all private employers in the United States with 100 or more employees. So that one actually provides for vaccination. You can have a mandatory vaccination policy, but you can also provide your employees with the choice of vaccination or weekly testing. So we've got kind of three competing things. I understand that there are employers who may fall under all three of those things. And so the trick then is finding the one that's probably the most comprehensive and complying with that one, which is a little tricky because they all have different requirements. The OSHA rule has significant record keeping and other types of requirements that the other ones tend not to have. So it's going to be a little bit of a mystery about which one is more comprehensive. But if you look at just, does it mandate vaccines or does it give a choice? The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid and the federal contractor standard would probably be probably the most strict in terms of what they require.
So do you get to choose or do you have to find a way to comply with all of the ones that apply?
You would have to find a way to comply with all of the ones, which again, would be looking at them and saying which one provides, you know, the federal government probably say provides the most protection to your employees. And that's going to be the one that mandates vaccines. The one that gives the choice, I'm not sure you could say that's as strict as the mandatory vaccine ones. So yeah, the trick is going to be, and we may see some guidance on this, but so far we have not. The trick is to see which one would apply to you. A little bit of a wrinkle, for states that have implemented their own vaccine mandates, for instance, Illinois, usually when there's a federal regulation, it will trump or preempt a corresponding state one, unless the state one is, provides for greater protections for employees. And so that, again, that's for employers in Illinois. And that one was really for healthcare workers, I want to say higher education and maybe a few other categories. Again, the trick's going to be to see which one is providing the most protection. It's going to be a lot of analysis, a lot of work. There's kind of tight timeframes for putting these policies and procedures in place. With respect to the OSHA rule, we have a stay in place. It's being held up by Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals pending a challenge. There have been challenges to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid rule, but I have not seen a stay issued for either of those. There's also challenges to the contractor standard. So it's a little bit of a mess right now in terms of where we go and what employers should be doing at this point.
So I think, until we know more, we should assume that whichever ones appear to apply are the ones that we should be following, and that may be more than one at the same time. And until we're told otherwise, those are considered to be in effect. Am I correct?
I think so. I mean, again, they can't, the government would not be able to enforce them at this point while the stay is in place. You know, but employers should, you know, again, we don't know how long that stay will last. And so, or whether the deadlines would be extended if the stay lasted for any period of time. So I think employers, it's probably to your benefit to at least start thinking about, you know, getting your policy and procedures in place. For instance, the OSHA rule requires a written policy and a lot of written disclosures to employees. It requires a lot of record keeping that you'll need to start to get in place. And it'll be a tight time frame if the stay is lifted and the deadlines are not extended. So we've been encouraging at least look at these things. There's a lot of discretion in the different rules about how you can handle certain things. So we're saying like at least get out and ahead of that. See how you want to handle these things. Put what you need to put in place, and just be prepared.
Okay, so with the Illinois one, which has been in place for quite a while, it does mandate vaccines for certain types of employers. And mm-hmm. So actually, I would guess most of the, you know, the physician and dental practices out there are complying with it, as far as I know. Certainly our clients are complying. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean, though, that they may not need to comply with one of the. So if they're a certain size, no doubt they're going to be hit with the OSHA requirements as well, which you're indicating would require certain written policies and procedures, which were not required under the Illinois requirements.
Correct.
So that is an extra step for them to have to take. So for the requirements that are tied to the size of the employer, are they looking at only the healthcare providers there, or are they counting every single employee or worker in that business?
But when you look at headcount, you look at all employees, not just the ones providing direct care under, for instance, the OSHA standard. Right. I know that the Illinois standard had some parsing out of people who did not provide direct care. The OSHA standard does not, and I don't believe the CMS one does either, make that distinction. So you're just looking at headcount. And when you look at headcount, you're including your full-time employees, your part-time employees. If you have direct hires who are just considered temporary or floater type, they are counted. What doesn't count is if you go through, say, a medical staffing company and you have, you know, people working in your place who are not your W-2 employees, they would not be counted as part of the headcount.
What about remote workers? Are they counted?
They're counted for part in terms of coverage. So they would be included in the headcount. Completely remote workers who do not have any contact with other employees or customers, patients, that kind of thing, they wouldn't have to comply with the vaccination or testing requirements, but they are considered part of the headcount for determining if you're covered by the rule.
Okay, I think that's good to know. And of course, you still need to be looking at legal exemptions, I assume.
Yes, the rules, you know, contain if you have a medical contraindication or a sincerely held religious belief, the employer still has to address those. The CMS standard is actually a little bit silent about whether you can allow testing for people with exemptions or whether you have to move them or whether you have to exit them or put them on leave or anything like that. But the safest thing to do, obviously, is to see what accommodations available. Under the OSHA standard, for example, it's very easy. You can allow them to be tested once a week and wear face coverings at all times. So again, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but you know, an accommodation would have to be made for those employees who request it. That doesn't present, you know, the term is undue burden on the employer.
Okay, what about the cost of the testing? I know that's something that a lot of our clients have called to ask us about. Does the employer have to pay for it? Does the employee pay for it? Or how does that work?
Well, the at least for the OSHA rule, and I think the other rules actually don't really address it, the employer can shift the cost of the test to the employee. So it can say to the employee, if we choose the testing route, you're on your own with that. Go get the test. There is a provision for at-home tests, but the employee cannot both give themselves the test and report the results, but those are allowed. The employee can be required to pick up the cost. There's a little bit of a wrinkle to that, especially in Illinois, because Illinois has a law about employee expenses. And it may be very, that the cost of this test, if it's being required, that the employer may have to pick up some or all of it. That's only because Illinois has that specific statute. Most states, I have not seen that. In those other states without such a protection for employees, an employer can say, however you get the test is fine, it's your expense, it's your on your own time, that kind of thing. I sense that's going to be an issue. And if you have a collective bargaining agreement in your workplace, that's probably going to be something that you'll have to negotiate with the union. But in a non-union workplace, you're just simply subject to that Illinois law.
Okay, so I'm seeing in a lot of new employment agreements right now a requirement, a prerequisite for starting employment that you show evidence of having been vaccinated with the COVID vaccine. I'm seeing grounds for termination where people refuse to be vaccinated. So I guess the question is, with these new vaccination requirements, they're tied specifically to COVID, I assume, right?
Yes.
Do they have an end date, or would they just be withdrawn when there's no longer COVID issue out there?
At least with respect to the OSHA one, and I believe the CMS one as well, they'll stay in place. You know, typically the emergency temporary standards are limited. This one, I don't believe they have a sunset provision in them. They will be there until they're either withdrawn or they're replaced by a permanent rule. And I sense that will be somewhere down the line. I don't see these being lifted. Presuming they survive the court challenge, I don't see these being lifted probably in the next 6 months or even the year. So we'll have to see what happens. So for the foreseeable future, yes, there would need to be compliance with them.
All right, so what happens if you don't comply? You don't properly comply, you don't fully comply. Are they going, assuming that these stay in place and they're not revoked, will they be making random office visits to see your policies and procedures? Will there be fines? You know, do any of these laws now speak to enforcement at all?
Well, you know, for the federal contractor provision, obviously the penalty for consistent noncompliance, I believe there are provisions for coming into compliance if you're not, would be the revocation of your contract. That's the remedy for that. Under the CMS, again, there's provisions for coming into compliance, but you know, your ability to receive Medicare and Medicaid payments, I think, would be in jeopardy if you weren't complying. Under the OSHA standard, it's the regular OSHA enforcement. There's really nothing specific to this rule, but the OSHA enforcement and penalties can be steep. There can be $14,000 a day for certain types of violations. That's the number I keep hearing in the commentary. The issue with OSHA is that, they're not equipped to deal with this additional administrative burden. They already don't have, sufficient manpower or funding or ability to enforce the rules they have. They tend to limit themselves to very large, significant violations. It remains to be seen how much oversight they will have over this process. There is a provision in the OSHA rule about very quick responses if OSHA requests information from you, but it really remains to be seen whether, as a practical matter, they'll be able to do that. This is a huge additional burden on them. And for an agency that's already spread thin, I'm not sure it bodes well for significant enforcement.
Well, this is true of all healthcare, but in particular, as it relates to OSHA, we've had clients get visits or investigated since COVID started. Mm-hmm. And usually it's because of a complaint raised actually by a worker in the office about other people not complying with COVID or about inadequate PE or whatever it is. So I think that the risk may actually come from within for noncompliance in many cases. So assuming you're too small, nobody really cares, or they don't have the manpower, might not actually be the right way to go, because if somebody is actually calling and complaining about you, then they've got an easy hit, right? And maybe they're sharing information.
OSHA is largely a reactive agency. They tend to respond to complaints, to incidents. They have a planned inspection, that kind of thing program. But again, I think that gets swallowed up by the emergency ones. So yes, to the extent that you have you know, employees or patients or members of the public complaining, that typically is going to be what engenders a response rather than anything else.
Right. Now, we generally, even though our practices are meeting the requirements, there's a lot of patients out there who feel that the requirements should be higher, aren't high enough for them, et cetera. So we generally receive letters and complaints all the time in our practices from patients. And even though we meet the standards, it's not high enough for them. And those are the kind of patients that are going to file complaints. And they may not go to the right agency. They might. So they could hit OSHA. They could hit the licensing board. They might just try Department of Health. They could try anyone. So it is, you know, there's a lot of different reasons, reputation, compliance with law, possible fines, et cetera, you know, to try and comply as best you can. Now, of course, we are happy to answer any questions that you may have. This is a daily issue that Karen especially is dealing with. So please don't be shy. If you have questions, this is all new and it's a lot to deal with. So, all right. Any final points you want to share? I know that, you know, this is kind of high level, but we could talk about this in detail for hours. So wanted to give everybody a sense of what these new rules are all about. Is there any final thoughts that we want to share? Is there anything we should have covered that we didn't cover?
I think we covered the high level. There are so many nuts and bolts to these different rules that I think it would be, again, like you said, hours. But we're certainly, you know, if you have specific questions about compliance, about what you should be doing now, absolutely reach out. This is a really difficult time for employers. You know, they are sandwiched in between these requirements and their employees. And it's really tough right now. So whatever we can do to help with that, just let us know. And you know, we'll get through this one way or the other. And, you know, I've been checking almost like hourly for any news on the state to see what's going on with that. And we'll certainly keep people posted if that changes.
All right, perfect. Well, thanks again, Karen Adinolfi from Retzel and Andrus in our employment department. And I'm Erica Adler. Thank you so much for joining us at the Health Law Hotspot. If you want to see some of the prior podcasts that Karen and I have done about the vaccine, the Illinois mandate and vaccines in general, how to handle requests for medical and religious exemptions, we've done it all. So please feel free to go see our prior podcasts on this at ralaw.com and feel free to reach out or email either one of us with any questions.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Karen. And see you guys next time on the Health Law Hotspot.
Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.